So my big impossible right now.
So my impossible is...
My impossible.
The impossible.
I think the impossible...
An impossible dream that I think we could pull off one day would be...
I am Tansley Stearns, and this is Despite Impossible. I am a longtime credit union executive leading Community Financial as president and CEO. I have always admired and been inspired by people whose passion is boundless and who don't comprehend the word impossible. This show focuses on their stories.
Today's guest is Teresa Freeborn. She's an experienced executive with a demonstrated history of corporate leadership, including co-founding Smash and Tess with her daughter. She's a longtime advocate for women and an outspoken and sought-after speaker and media commentator, delivering important truths with warmth, compassion, and humor. She is also the author of Suits and Skirts, Game On, available on Amazon. This is Teresa's story.
People who know you best will describe you as?
Well, I think, thinking from a professional angle here, probably balanced and patient and collaborative and all those kinds of things. But people that really know me, it's, I think what comes out first is sort of this enthusiasm, and I'm energetic, and I'm like, you know, it's just the ever ready bunny kind of thing. I asked my daughter last night, I said, so how would you describe me? She says, oh, fun, super fun. Until you're not. That was perfect.
What about today's version of yourself would impress your 10 years younger self?
That I actually wrote a book, and that I would pivot from a CEO of a financial institution to an author speaker. I mean, honestly, I would be very impressed if I heard this 10 years ago. I had no idea this was going to happen.
What's your most unpopular music opinion?
Oh my goodness, this might not be popular with your group though. I just want you to know that. But I don't believe that Taylor Swift is the bomb, okay? I just don't. And I say this because, you know, I look at her and I think, okay, yes, you've got 14 Grammys behind you. You got fourth album of the year or whatever she got this year. But honestly, when she dissed Celine Dion, I lost it. That was it for me. I'm sorry. So, you know, I just think that she is the woman who's 34 years old. It's time for her to stop thinking about being a teeny bopper and speaking to just teenagers because they love her. Yeah. But why doesn't she use her 34-year-old self and influence something that's really powerful and meaningful in life here? And she's got the power to do this, right? And I just think, stop squandering it. There's more you can do in life here, and you're right at that age. So let's get on with it. So yeah, if I was coaching her, this is what I would be doing.
Okay. I love it. I love it. I will tell you that Mackenzie will not agree with that.
She will be very unhappy with my comment. I know.
But that's why we ask. I love it. When was the last time you danced so hard that your feet were sore?
Well, my daughter had her 40th birthday a year ago. And so we had a big birthday bash, and I'm going to say this, that I danced so hard because there was a lot of women. The guys are all out at the bar drinking, and the women are all inside dancing, of course. You know, we're just having a blast. And I think it has something to do with the silly shoes, but maybe it was too many Negronis too. I'm not sure, but I ended up falling into the DJ. So yeah, that's how epic that little event was. But yes, that's what I remember. But man, were my feet sore the next day.
What's the book, song, or movie that said the words you couldn't say?
I know you know that I'm Canadian. So, of course, I think back to sort of my youth and what was impressionable to me. And I can't let this one go. And that is Joni Mitchell singing, I Wish I Had a River. I think it's just called The River, but it's I Wish I Had a River That I Could Skate Away On. Mm-hmm. And I say that because I think she wrote it, obviously, for lost loves and all of that. But I think of it in turn. When I listen to it and I hear that phrase, I just think, sometimes don't you just want to skate away, you know? And, of course, being a Canadian, it was a frozen over river. And it was, you know, in northern Alberta. So, yeah, this is where that comes from. But, you know, I just can so relate to that sometimes. I just want to skate away, you know?
Yeah. What gets an undeserved bad reputation?
Oh, as a woman, I think you'd join me in this one, and that is showing emotion. Mm-hmm. I guess I've always believed that it takes a pretty strong person to acknowledge and to embrace their emotions. Mm-hmm. I always view it as cathartic. You know, if you get emotional, it's kind of it's a game changer for you, your mind, your body, everything kind of changes. And I look at it and think, well, what's the alternative? You're not going to get emotional. What are you going to do? You're just going to not show emotion. You're going to keep it all cooped up inside. And quite frankly, I think that's why people get unhealthy, is because they don't show the emotion. And sadly, and I talk a bit about this in my book, and that is, you know, despite all the societal progress that we've made here, you know, being openly emotional is still viewed as sort of this feminine trait, and it's a negative one, right? It's a negative trait. Mm-hmm. And my view is emotion isn't gendered. It's just we all choose to show it in different ways. Men do it differently, but I've worked for a lot of emotional men. Emotion, and I don't see them crying for sure. I don't see them being extremely vulnerable and open. What I do see is them stomping around and like they're angry and there's a lot of emotion being projected there. So stop calling it a woman thing, because it's not. We just do it differently. I kind of like the way the women do it. Just saying.
What's your favorite thing that someone you admire does?
Okay, if anyone demonstrates honesty or vulnerability, you got me at hello. Like, soon as I see that, I am in and I'm engaged and I'm there. I'm a fan immediately. It's like, and a male or female, doesn't matter to me. It's not a gender thing either, but it's just, you know, show me who you really are. Tell me how you really feel. Tell me how it really happened. And don't mind that it might put you in a bad light, because it doesn't ever. It just makes me feel, oh God, they're vulnerable. They're showing me everything. And I can build that trust. So that's an important trait for me, for sure.
Tell us about your impossible.
Not to wear it out, but I really do want to see 50-50 women in leadership positions, okay? I mean, if there's nothing more important to me is that, and I view it as impossible because we have such a long ways to go. But I want to see it there, and I want it to be lasting, and I want it to be permanent. It's change that has to happen. And I'm talking about, let's have women sit equally in numbers at the very senior levels of leadership in every single faculty and industry. Has to happen.
What are some of the challenges you faced that looked insurmountable at the time?
Well, I started my executive postings back in the 80s. So... the costumes from then, I look back and look at those pictures and I just have to laugh, because I'm trying to be like a guy. You know, I've got shoulder pads. I've even got photos with me with a wide tie with a golden retriever on it. Like, what was I thinking? But it was all about, I had to fit in with the guys, right? Mm-hmm. I couldn't actually even dress to show my femininity. If I did, it was like, ooh, that's it. We're not going to even respect her now. Like, look, because all they're going to think about are my legs. You know, and it's like, it was just such a crazy time. And I think it was a challenging one, but I still kind of persevered. But I'm going to tell you, those were huge challenges at the time, but somehow I was driven. Somehow I just saw that brass ring and I kept going. But yeah, it was just a crazy time in the 80s for sure.
Was there a point during your journey when you felt like giving up?
Only when I was in the middle of writing my book. Oh. And I kind of freaked out. I thought, oh my God, what am I doing? I don't know what I'm doing here. This is crazy. And I got a bit stressed out and I thought, I don't think I'm going to finish this. Can you imagine? I'm going to give up. And then I kind of, you know, slapped myself around a bit and realized, no, you're not going to give up. You're just going to one foot in front of the other. It'll become clear again, just like it was clear at the beginning. It got a little muddled on the journey here, but we're going to be fine. So yeah, I would say that is probably the one that stands out in my most recent memory for sure.
What's one thing you learned about yourself as you've been going through this impossibility?
Well, I mean, everyone can talk about setting the goal, you know, and then striving to achieve that goal and making a plan and persevering no matter what, right? It's that kind of structure I need always to sort of, you know, when you think it's impossible, give me a structure and let me know what my next steps are going to be. And I can kind of see the hope and the promise, right? That's just how I run. Yeah.
What's your advice for folks to face their fear of inaction and use the fire in their bellies to bring their impossible dreams to life?
Yeah, that you remind me of, wasn't there a book, Fire in the Belly, years ago I read, I think, in one of my first leadership books?
Yes.
Never forgot that. You know, I guess I believe that inaction, if you're not going to do anything, it actually breeds more doubt and fear, right? If you don't do anything, that's what it does. It makes you start conjuring up all sorts of things that are absolutely untrue, unnecessary to think about, but I don't know, that's what you do. So I just would suggest people really look at it as that sort of goal structure, which is kind of, what can I win at today? What can I do well today? What can I finish today? Right? It's about winning something and getting that done. You have to be motivated to do it. So to get off that dime, because it's easy to go there. It's easy to do the inaction and just sit back and go, damn, I'm never going to get anything done. This isn't going to happen today. No, it will. It will. Just set the goal. Just go. You'll do it.
What do you look forward to most in the next 12 months?
12 months. Well, I would say I want to be there right beside my two adorable little granddaughters. They're 3 and 6. And I want to be there because I just want to be there while they learn and while they discover and while they figure things out, while they fail or while they love. I mean, to be alone with them and just pay attention and watch them and listen to them is just, it's amazing. They inspire me to inspire them every day. They really do. This is just a big deal to me. So yeah, that's what I think the next 12 months holds for me and the biggest promise right there, those little girls.
What's your next impossible, my friend?
You know, I think I worry about getting everything done that I want to get done in my lifetime. Am I going to run out of time? I mean, that's what I worry about. So if you think of what's impossible, it's impossible to do everything I want to do. You wouldn't believe the list I have. I mean, it's massive. And I just think, am I ever going to do it all? So that's probably my biggest challenge, is trying to figure out how I'm going to do everything I need to do. I need to do. It's not just want. I need to do these things. And so that would be it. Yeah.
Who's someone else that should tell us their story?
Well, I could tell you it should be Michelle Obama or something like that. But then I'm thinking, could you get her on this? Could you do that? Maybe you could.
Hey, listen, I you know how big I dream. So yes, let's go.
Dream big. But I would say that if I look around my colleagues in the industry, you know, there are so many women we haven't heard from, so many leaders that we haven't heard from. And I know they got a lot to say. So, I mean, I think of, you know, April Klobes right there in your neighborhood or in your, at least in your state. Yeah. Kathy Tierney is one that just, I so admire her. And she's got so much to say. And every time I talk to her, I learn something new about Kathy that I had no idea. And oh man, this is why this woman is such a strong, amazing leader. And then a younger set here in California that I just admire so much is Jennifer Binkley from Altura. If you haven't spent some time with that gal, you've got to. She's just, talk about energy and enthusiasm and so smart. So yeah, I would definitely put her on your roster.
So you're asking me about Teresa's perspective that Taylor Swift could do more with her voice. And here's what I would tell you. I actually see it differently than Teresa, which I know she'll appreciate. We can have good, healthy debate. I actually think that Taylor has in many ways been a wonderful advocate for women. And I think probably more importantly, as a mom, I see Taylor in many ways as a very good role model for my daughter, Mackenzie, who's 13. Now, Mackenzie has a somewhat unpopular opinion that she does not like this new album. Her mother does. And here's what I would say. You know, I think we also have to be careful. I do believe that there's a responsibility that leaders and people that build a strong business and reputation to support other human beings. I also think there's a risk when we have an expectation of that, right? Everybody's got to do that at the pace and the practice that allows them to do it in a very authentic way. And that's what I see Taylor doing. You know, I know that this will be seen or heard by many with rolled eyes, but I'll tell you, The Man is a song that I listen to over and over again, and it resonates. And when she first sang it and I first heard it, I sobbed, because that is squarely my experience. And so I gotta tell Teresa that I see it a little differently, and that's great. You know, we all do see the world a little differently, but for me, T-Swift is doing right by women. you know, Teresa talked about vulnerability in writing a book, and I am writing a book. It's a memoir, and I've had people, because I've been public about it, to put a little pressure on myself, say, why are you writing a memoir? You're not done with your life yet. And this won't be my last book, friends. What I would say is I've learned a lot about the practice of writing. You know, in writing this book, there's a lot of discipline that I've applied, which is certainly something that I've applied in other parts of my life. But, you know, a project like this requires a weekly commitment, and then also some separation, you know, getting a draft done and then being able to come into it and out of it. And, you know, what I hope that this book can do is elevate the lessons of my story. I care less about my story, although there are parts of it that I hope are interesting. I hope that what it provides for other human beings, and I would say in particular women, is a lens into what I've been able to learn, and that those lessons are something that can be helpful and maybe cathartic as people walk through challenges. So the question of whether or not I will do everything I need to do is a really good one. You know, as you mature in life, you become more and more reflective, I think, every year about how much time is left. And, you know, none of us is promised tomorrow. So will I do everything I need to do? What I can answer is this. I will do everything I can with every ounce of energy and capacity I have for every day I have left on this planet. And that's the best any of us can do. And, you know, the demand that I put on myself for every day is a big one. So I hope that I do accomplish all that I need to do.
This concludes today's episode. For exclusive content, visit us at despiteimpossible.com and subscribe to this podcast.